Hey, before we get going, I just want to say that our friends over at Medium have gift subscriptions available this holiday season. It's $50 and you give someone a full year's membership to Medium. All the great writing, only some of which is about crypto, but it helps support writers. It helps support someone in your life reading more, and I recommend it. So again, gift subscriptions at Medium available at medium.com/gift. $50. Do it. It helps support this show. All right, here's the show. Whoa! What a fucking week. I don't even know what to think. Okay, quick rewind. Last week's episode, you may have noticed, was a bit short. That was because Jay and I opened it with a long discussion about how stable Bitcoin had been in the 6,000, 6,500 range, and how boring that was, and a bunch of other stupid stuff that we cut out so as not to embarrass ourselves, because instantly we had jinxed the market. And it started falling. When we taped this episode, it was in the 4,000s. As I speak now, it's in the 3,000s. Who knows where it is while you're listening to this. But we talked through that, as well as a user-requested discussion. Many of you listeners wanted to hear us talk about the debacle, which is the Bcash split. So we did. Here's that show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, November 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $4,413.
Jay, welcome.
Hey.
So last we talked, me and you went on, I would describe as extended riff about how stable Bitcoin was. And how it was getting boring because the price never changed. This was nary a week ago.
Do we have to use the word extended?
It was an extended.
I would say that we went on a riff, which makes us look less bad.
I'm gonna say I might upgrade it to a jam session. We were really jamming on this topic.
The part that I find most damning for us is that we did not talk about the price for like 4 straight months, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We didn't mention the price ever. And then finally we were like, and I don't remember whose fault it was. I assume that we share culpability here, but we're like, let's talk about the price.
Since it didn't come out, I'm going to say, I think I brought it up by making a joke about how we, our editor James could copy and paste the robot voice, just reading 6253 every week,
yeah,
and no one would notice.
It would probably be right, yeah.
So that is how I lost a considerable amount of portfolio value. I tested the gods with a small joke.
Well, listen, your Bitcoin value is exactly the same, and so that's all that matters, as we both know.
I mean, I don't even look at the price because I know my Bitcoin value is stable.
Yeah, and when the real flippening happens, when Bitcoin takes over the U.S. dollar, like, your U.S. dollar value won't matter. Like, Bitcoin will probably be worth $6 billion U.S. dollars because the U.S. dollar will be worthless.
Okay, so there's two big Bitcoin moves. It dropped below 6,000 and was hovering in the 5,000, mid-5,000s. And then, as we tape this, in the last 24 hours, another huge crash down to where it's testing 4,100-ish.
Yeah. These are prices that you and I haven't seen since, like, the China crash, right? Do you remember that? Like, that was our first big crash, was when there was, like, a series of shady, like, impossible to translate flyers that people were posting on Twitter saying that China had banned Bitcoin. Like, the price dropped by 60% in something like 2 hours.
It's not a crypto hoax if it's not thin and sketchy in Photoshop.
Yeah, you know what? I will say that that doesn't happen as much anymore, and I'm kind of depressed by it. Like, it was better. I thought crypto was better when we were all trying to, like, put Korean. I don't have to do this because I could read Korean at the level of a second grader. But, like, when we were putting like Korean newspaper stories into Google Translate and trying to figure what they meant, crypto was a lot more fun back then. Like, now it's just kind of like depressing news after depressing news after depressing news.
All right. I don't think either of us know why these crashes happen. I'm going way out on a limb here. I'm going out on a limb and going to say, regardless of why I think the crash happened, you will probably say that's bullshit.
No. I'm breaking from protocol here.
I love it.
In the past, I have said that the price of Bitcoin is its own thing, you know, like it exists almost as an autonomous state, and that we just watch it change and we have no idea what's going on. But I do like there are enough similarities, speaking of like the old fun days of crypto, that I think that maybe we can hash out some sort of small argument as to why this is happening. And I'm going to make it right now.
Hash it out.
Like, do you remember back in the early days of this podcast, or maybe even in the basement tape era, when Roger Ver got in like his second fight, let's say, after Bitcoin Cash?
After Bitcoin Cash?
Yes, this was a day. It was after Bitcoin Cash had launched.
Bitcoin Cash 2 Electric Boogaloo. It was kind of like a follow through shot.
Yeah, it really was. And it was this day in which it was actually quite incredible where Roger, you could see it on the blockchain. Roger Ver was moving large amounts of Bitcoin in an attempt to allegedly crash the price of Bitcoin and doing massive sell offs. The price of Bitcoin Cash was spiking and nobody really knew what to do. I think Bitcoin at the time was probably around like $6,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin Cash went up like 120% and people are trying to catch the knives. I don't know if that's going up or getting going down.
People were trying to stab each other in the face.
Yeah, don't mess with that. Well, Roger Ver is back. And he is back associated with a large move in crypto, although this is crypto down.
Yep.
It's another fork. It's a Bitcoin Cash fork. And it also involves another one of our favorite figures, which is Craig, not Satoshi Wright.
Fake Toshi. Not to be confused with X or Toshi.
Yeah, who is the real Satoshi.
Wouldn't it be shocking? What if Craig Wright was X or Toshi?
Like, I'm not willing to entertain that possibility because I've seen Craig's writing.
This whole scenario is kind of resembles that. It's like all of your crypto villains all in one one cinematic universe.
I know. I feel nostalgic about the glory days of crypto because it's like the same guys are back.
It's like the Expendables of crypto.
Yeah, really. So Craig Wright, for those who don't know, Craig Wright and Roger Ver, who own a lot of Bitcoin Cash, are having a fight. And Craig Wright wants to make something called Bitcoin SV, which stands for Satoshi's Vision, which is, you know, his vision, as he claims. And then Roger Ver wants to make something called Bitcoin ABC, which is adjustable blockchain or something like that, or
adjustable
capacity.
Block capacity, I think.
Yeah, and this is all this technical stuff that nobody who listens to the show really cares about. But if you want to know about it, you can read about it.
They came up with the name ABC before they knew what it was an acronym for, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then they like reverse engineered it.
I feel like that's one of those acronyms I'm like, it doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but okay.
Yeah. I think the long and short of it, or the short of it, the dirtiest way for us to explain this is just saying, look, they have some argument about block size like they had before, but the real argument is about something that, about like certain command lines that are in the code that neither of us care about.
There are these things called opcodes. I'm taking all this information from The Breaker, great magazine, shout outs. That are basically like little hooks in the scripting language. And Satoshi defined a bunch of them, some of which are used in Bitcoin, some of which aren't. Bitcoin ABC proposed that
new ones.
They would add some.
The important thing you need to know is that these two guys disagree about how to do this, shockingly. And it is the extension of an acrimonious few weeks for them in which Craig Wright wrote an email. Did you see this email that he sent to Roger Ver? I'm going to read it because
I would say, Jay, you're, I would say, a connoisseur of the angry email. And this is a man who, you can tell this man's written thousands of angry emails in his life.
The first thing I want to say is that it's written much like a newspaper column in which every sentence is its own paragraph.
Are you going to read in an Australian accent or no?
No, I'm not. If you want a war, I will do 2 years of no trade, nothing. In the war, no coin can trade. If you want ABC, you want shit coins. Welcome to bankruptcy. It was nice knowing you. Bitcoin will die before ABC shits on it. And then, blah, blah, blah. And then the last two lines are, I am Satoshi. Have a nice life. You will now discover me when pissed off. And no, you could have had proof. Your choice. Fuck off, Craig.
Craig Wright has been walking one of the most difficult lines of saying that he is Satoshi, but no one has the right to know whether he's Satoshi. He's a private citizen and doesn't have to reveal this, though he continually reveals that he's Satoshi whenever he's in an argument.
Yeah, yeah. And this one has I am Satoshi in capital letters.
I think there was something good in there where he was like, you will die before I shit on you. What does that even mean?
So the question that we have about the crash is that it used to be when these types of big whales used to do things that the price of Bitcoin would move, you know, because these guys used to own and probably still own a shitload of cryptocurrencies. And so when they do things, people notice and it shows up. And the question is whether or not that's still true. And I would say that maybe it's still true. You know, maybe this has shocked something in the crypto space where people are getting spooked, or some people with large amounts of crypto are being like, I'm out of here, I'm going somewhere else. And maybe that's what is, after months of stability, actually responsible for these two drops.
I don't really buy that, because I just don't really see what BCH has to do with Bitcoin anymore. When that first split happened, it was a pretty momentous occasion, because it was like, this might not work. This might destroy Bitcoin. This might be the like rift that both sides lose. And what actually happened was, in a pretty orderly manner, people were like, no. And I believe that people mostly rejected it because of the attitude of the people on the BCH side, the big blockers. They're just like the kind of people I don't want to hang out with. I don't want them to be in charge of anything.
At the same time, you know, like that's why I was not mentioning the fork itself, but, you know, just the day in which like Roger Ver decided to troll everybody, like the price did move just because he was doing stuff, you know? And there might be people like Jihan Wu, who is also, you know, is smarter than these two guys, but does own a lot of BCH and probably has a lot of Bitcoin, who might also be making moves. That's all. My point is just that I think that we could plausibly say that maybe there's some big players who are around these guys who are responsible for these types of movements.
I sort of buy what you're saying. Jihan Wu is the like third supervillain in this poster. He's like they're like at the front with the like bazookas in their hands, and he's like in the back with like a machete or something.
Or he's like in the back in a bulletproof car watching these two clowns fight each other.
That was kind of what I was thinking also. I was like, is Jihan Wu, or like all these guys who already made a ton of money, like what's the point of all this stuff? It's like, I guess it's like cartels fighting cartels. The whole thing feels to me like there was a rift in Bitcoin. There was like the father and his two sons, and both of them were like, I should be in charge. Like, I'm the chosen son. And they couldn't get along, so they walked out into the wilderness to start their own like civilization. And now they're just fighting with each other, like out where no one cares. But the part that seems like maybe, if I were to describe what part of it I think might be affecting the price, it seemed like the war in the first round was like Roger Ver was like moving big chunks of currency of Bitcoin around. And there was this whole idea of, I'm going to like pull my support and you guys are all going to like pay for it, which didn't really happen. But the hash power has like supplanted tokens themselves, or I guess they're not tokens. What do you call coins themselves?
Yeah.
As the artillery in this war. So now you have things like Bitmain's hash power, which I know was primarily aimed at BCH anyway, but it does affect the overall Bitcoin ecosystem. Like, if he like goes and pulls all of his weapons to go fight in this fucking stupid war out in the wilderness, it does affect Bitcoin's hash. It affects how much attention there is on Bitcoin mining. I guess I can see if like it kind of makes everyone look kind of immature and stupid.
Yeah, and that, I think that really is sort of my sense, which is just that like Bitmain, some of these huge places that do have holdings in Bitcoin Cash, Like, what are they doing? You know, like, I don't know if Roger Ver has enough Bitcoin left to, even if he sold all of it, let's say, that it would make any difference. Probably not, you know? And Craig Wright, who knows? But are there people who are involved with Bitcoin Cash quietly who are having these hash power fights? Like, are they getting spooked in some sort of way, or are they making a move that we might not know? And the only reason why I think that is because this is the only bit of news that we know about, right? And it is also the first time in months when anything has happened. And so I guess it's just human nature to draw a line between the two. But, you know, I at the same time, I will admit that I think that my inquiry into all of this, or my conclusion, is based more on the fact that I miss the days of crypto when we could kind of tell these stories and they're fun, you know? It's a lot less fun to just be like, well, you know, who knows, and no news matters. Like, it's a very bad, boring take to have.
You're the godfather of the news doesn't matter movement.
No, I know, but I've decided
okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going on the other side. I'm like Glenn Beck how Glenn Beck changes sides.
This one was a little bit of a ray of sunshine in my life. Just reading some of the details of it, like, I've talked many times on this program. If I were to describe two disreputable characters, and I included the details of Craig Wright and Roger Ver, like, you'd be like, I don't know, man. Like, this novel's a little literal. Like, he's a guy who got arrested for selling online fireworks, and then he became like a Bitcoin evangelist. Or like Craig Wright. So they were basically describing, like, where did Craig Wright get the idea to do Bitcoin SV? You know, like, why is he doing this? Because Bitcoin ABC isn't really a fork. Bitcoin ABC is just BCH doing what it wanted to do. That's the main thread, right? And I guess he still works for Enchain, which is like the scammy company that he was trying to like move Bitcoin patents to when he was still riding hard for Faketoshi status. And that is now owned by, or I don't know, maybe not owned by, but an associated party to that is this guy named Calvin Ayer, who, Jay, you're gonna enjoy his background. He's the founder of Bodog.
Oh, yeah, I know this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And Craig Wright says that they were like commiserating over how fucked up Roger Ver's plans or the ABC plans were. And they realized that they had to do this to save Satoshi's vision. This is literally a man who made hundreds of millions of dollars off of online gambling, then put it into Bitcoin, made even more. He is, I believe, His Excellency in whatever Caribbean nation that he lives in right now. And is building some sort of a, like, insane, like, crypto
$100 million house.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it's a resort. I think it's, like, a place to go with the other crypto rich. But, like,
sandals for crypto.
This is where Satoshi's vision is coming from. It's straight out of bought Caribbean citizenship, $100 million development. That is who is standing up for Satoshi's vision here.
You know who else is from the Caribbean?
Who's that? Oh, Excerptoshi?
Yeah.
So are you saying that Excerptoshi might know Calvin Ayer?
Yeah. Or maybe Calvin Ayer is Excerptoshi.
Hey, I'm just going to pause things here briefly to tell you about a podcast. Yes, another podcast, another crypto podcast called Late Confirmation. It's a daily news digest from CoinDesk with episodes coming out Monday through Friday that cover the day's news in crypto and blockchain. If you're listening to this, you'll notice that we are pretty much at least a week late on talking about the crash, which is an eternity in crypto. If you'd like up-to-the-minute news, get this show. It's run by a rotating list of hosts from the news pit of CoinDesk. Think of it as NPR's Up First, but for crypto. You can subscribe today by searching for Late Confirmation on Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening to this podcast.
In reality, look, I think part of the reason why we're searching for these questions is because we weren't really expecting this, right? Like, were you expecting this type of crash?
Well, if I had been suspecting it, I would have sold my Bitcoin.
No, I don't believe that because, like, you never sell your Bitcoin.
Well, I sell it at bad times. I just don't sell it at the right time ever.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's not enough spikes for you to catch a bottom. I guess we'll put it that way.
I mean, and it's all the same. I would have thought 6,600 was the bottom and bought it with whatever cash I had. I always think we're at the bottom.
Yeah, well, do you think that now?
No. Well, let's talk about it. So what is the Kang line here? The Kang line is 3,300?
Yeah, this was established over a year ago, I think, right?
Wow.
Yeah, so right now at like 8:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, Bitcoin's at 4,289. The Kang line, I think, was always, what, like 3,300, I think, or 3,500, somewhere around there?
I'm going to put it at 3,300, just because that's what you were saying today.
This was the line where I would buy back into Bitcoin at.
And I'd like to give a little credit to my co-host here. He was cheering for the Kang line when we were at like 9,800, when we had just crashed below. He was like, I'll buy at 3,300. We were like, shut up.
yeah. So I think that, I don't know, man. Like, you know, like we had this fight with.
Oh, wow. You want lower now?
Well, like, okay. So Ledger status this morning in our Telegram group said that I definitely would not buy at 3,300 because I would get scared and I'd just be like, fuck it. I'm still not going to buy. And I denounced that because I said that I was a man with integrity and that I had set the Kang line. I needed to hold the Kang line.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't know, man. Like, it just seems kind of grim. Like, I don't quite get it.
Did you set the Kang line or did your dad set the Kang line? Because I feel
like... my dad set the Kang line.
Yeah, I feel like the Kang line was originally your dad saying, I'll buy Bitcoin back when it's $2,000 or $3,000, and we were all like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, and this was when Bitcoin was like $15,000 or something like that. And he was like, I'm not buying that. I'll buy it when it's $3,000.
So the Kang line is in some ways your birthright.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to follow it, I think.
So I mean, I would think that the bottom very easily could go there. If people weren't buying the bejesus out of 4,100, I don't see why it can't go to almost any low, but I feel like we heard like doomsday people being like, it could go back to the 3,000s. And that makes me for no reason think, maybe that's the bottom.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it would be very weird for me to be right about anything, you know? And so I think if I bought at 3,300, that the chances are that it would keep going down. But I mean, I don't know. Like I can't think of a compelling reason why I would go back up. And this, you know, like I just like before when we would have these crashes, they would almost immediately spike back up and it was almost comical, right? Like
yeah.
We believe that we could time it like, oh, it's crashing. Good. We're going to buy these dips and it's going to just snap back up to $16,000 or whatever. And that just hasn't happened in a while, right? Like, it just is like this slow march down. It's like, it looks like a bunch of steps or something like that, where you crash, flat, crash, flat, crash, you know? And I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence that there's this interest to have it go back up. And I think that if I did get back in and then it went back up another like 50, 60%, I might just sell it because I just don't see the reason why there would be momentum to go back up to like $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I feel like the momentum would happen, and this is what I keep thinking is going to happen, and it's not happened, so it's probably not going to happen. If we bounced right now just back to where we were 2 weeks ago at 6,500, people who caught the bottom would have made a 50% gain.
More than that.
And I don't see why it can't pop up to $6,000-something, because as to speak in the Ledger Statusian terms, the fundamentals haven't really changed much. You can't say that, like, because Craig Wright led the Satoshi's Vision crew to a different square in the desert than the Roger Ver crew, that the fundamentals of Bitcoin are really that different.
Yeah, that's true.
So if we could get a bounce like that, then you would hear people, and people always cite the bottom, right? They don't cite, like, where you reasonably would have bought. They cite, like, if you bought the exact bottom. If people say, like, oh, you made a 70% gain if you bought the bottom, like, 2 weeks ago, then I see the path back to $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, that mania coming back where you start seeing the easy money. But this whole stock thing, like, what's happening in the U.S. stock market right now is not working out the way it was supposed to in relation to Bitcoin and the way we were talking about it a year ago. We always said people would flee descending stock markets, particularly in the tech industry, into Bitcoin. Couldn't have a better time than right now. You've got dirt cheap Bitcoin, And I do not hear about anyone selling their Amazon and buying Bitcoin.
Yeah, I don't know if these two things, if the Bitcoin market and how correlated it is with the stock market, but I do wonder if this had happened, if this massive sell-off of tech stocks had happened in November, last November, right? I wonder if it would have happened then when people's, like if people would have reinvested in cryptocurrency, even at that high price, because there was so much hope around it, you know? Now I don't know what people are going to put their money into other than uranium stocks. And like, that's one that I hear quite a bit. And
I think you have a limited sample size. There's literally one person talking about uranium stocks and he's in a Telegram group.
They talk about it in Wall Street Bets, the subreddit, quite a bit.
I think you need to look at like who you're spending time around.
Or maybe they're putting all their money into like legal New Jersey sports betting or something like that. I have no idea. But I think you're right. Like, I don't think that these people are putting their money into Bitcoin. What I think they're probably doing is selling off their tech stocks and just holding cash because they're terrified of what might happen in the next few weeks, which they're right to be. I mean, I'm terrified.
Look, there's nowhere to hide. I mean, I already lost as much crypto money as I possibly could have imagined. But if I hadn't put that money in crypto, I would have lost a more modest but still significant amount of money in tech stocks, which is what I would have put it into otherwise.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, it's for the first time, like the two, like, you know, one is, I would say one is much worse than the other, but you know, one is not stable while the other one is like spiking around all over the place. You know, they're just sort of both depressingly dropping almost every day.
There's something about the whole SV versus ABC thing where I'm like, you guys, this is not the time, you know, like, people are wondering whether this shit is like worth it at all. Like, this is like an insanely like tone deaf squabble to be having right now.
Yeah, they don't care though, because you know they're rich and they live in like whatever, like some St. Martin's or something like that. And I think if you're rich in St. Martin's, like you don't even know what the tone is. You know, there's no tone to be deaf to. And you just kind of do your own thing and that you have fights with other rich guys. Well, you know, it's honestly like what I wish my life was.
I think Roger Ver did threaten. He was like, after I destroy ABC, I'm going to come for you, Bitcoin, and you, Ethereum. Like, he says he's going to start hash wars with everyone.
Yeah, that's good for it.
That's good for the podcast, ecosystem. I think.
Yeah, well, at least have something fun to talk about. I'm all for this podcast being about like Roger Ver and Craig Wright and John McAfee and a bunch of crazy people again. You know, crypto, like I don't know if I can handle any more talk about the future of Bitcoin. I just want some drama.
I think they just greenlit the McAfee movie, so we got that coming up in our future.
Who's playing McAfee? Like Mark Wahlberg?
I can't remember. More on that. More to come on that. Do you think this SEC stuff has any impact at all? I mean, the SEC stuff relates to people who are running pretty transparent scams.
Yeah.
But it's not good news.
I don't think so. I mean, there's I would say yes, but like, when did it actually have any real effect? Like, we've been dealing with SEC stuff for like 9 months, and what it generally does is it just wipes out a shitcoin and then they just move on, you know?
Yeah. I've heard some people advancing the narrative that like people who are legal law enforcement professionals, like the way you go after the mob is you go after some really easy cases. And then you go after the big boss, you know? I mean, we're talking about cartel tactics here, right?
Yeah, it's like how Rudy Giuliani took down the mafia in New York.
Yeah.
When he was attorney general.
Yeah, and the ferrets.
And the ferrets, yeah, that's true. Did he take down the ferrets, or did he just start like a hate campaign against the ferrets? I'm not sure if he took them down.
I have to say, I'm not a fan of Rudy Giuliani, but I am on his side. If a man repeatedly calls your call-in show to talk about ferret regulations, you should be allowed to just unleash on him.
Yeah, he had like two good moments. That was one of them.
I would like to see I know that you're involved in the documentary world right now. A documentary that was like, you know, when they have two characters and you're watching both of their lives in sync, Rudy Giuliani on one side, that ferret guy on the other side. We got to find that guy.
I wonder if he's still alive. You know, I think life is hard.
He sounded like he had a lot of spirit.
Yeah, he might be calling into you know, like a non-existent Bill de Blasio show right now and talking about ferrets into like a dial tone. Or maybe he's into cryptocurrency. That is also a possibility for that guy.
Quite possibly. But the idea would be that they are stringing together a bunch of singles to eventually go for a home run. And I don't know if that home run is Ethereum or someone lower on the chart. It seems like most people generally believe that Ethereum is in the clear now. But you don't actually have to get Ethereum. If you get, you know, the bottom one third of that ecosystem even, that's like a lot. That's a lot of stuff that will go away. I think there's even discussion of like refunding Ethereum to people, which that's not going to happen.
Oh my God. But I have a question for you, which is, and I've asked this before, and we keep going down past milestones, but is there going to ever be a price of crypto where like you will just get out of it and forget that it ever happened, and it'll be a sad footnote to your financial life?
Like there's a price lower than this that I will sell at, you're saying?
Well, like where you just be like, look, this stuff was obviously just like Beanie Babies, and I don't want to pay any more attention to it anymore. And, you know, I just think that I got scammed. Like, is that a price-based thing for you?
I mean,
because I know that like we would all say no in a perfect world, but you know, everybody is an emotional person and their general conclusions are tied to the emotions of the way that their money works in crypto. So do you think there's a point where you'll just be like, fuck this, and just exit?
I think I passed that point. I think I saw that point along the road and I should have gotten off and taken a piss there, but I just let it like blaze right by me. And now that I'm like more than down more than 50%, it just kind of feels like I'm just going to ride it. Like I would like to get out, you know, at a break even point, I would like to reduce my exposure to crypto, mostly for psychological reasons. But I feel like at this point, to speak like a poker player, I'm better off continuing to play this hand at the depth I'm in. I can't think of like, if it goes down, like it just starts to be like very little upside to cashing out.
Yeah. I mean, except that you could, you know, the upside is that like if you sell at 4,000 as opposed to 1,000, you have four times as much money, right?
Part of the problem is that I kind of believe in Bitcoin now.
Why? Like the price of Bitcoin or
no,
the project?
I kind of like, I'm very reluctant, but maximalism does make a lot of sense to me. Like, I actually do think Bitcoin is a pretty revolutionary idea that I think is going to have a big effect on the world. I don't know how we get from point A to point B, but I can believe in that vision more than I can believe in a crash to zero. And it feels to me like the remaining money that I have in crypto now from a point where Bitcoin is trading at $4,200 or whatever, I just feel like it's a better gamble to gamble on it at least coming back up one more time than to think it's going to literally go to zero.
Yeah.
Not a rational choice. I mean, no. I would definitely respect someone who was like, you're out of your mind for thinking that way.
And, you know, I got to say that when I talk to my friends who are in crypto and who have crypto holdings, they feel the same way as you. And I don't have any coins, and I haven't for a while, really. But I think that I would do the same thing that you did, which is that there's no point in cashing out right now, because if you miss the upside, you're going to be so depressed, you know?
Yeah.
And if it goes down a little bit more, then, you know, it's just kind of getting kicked in the balls one more time. And, you know,
let's say I'm waiting for 10,000. Let's say my exit point is 10,000. I'm happy selling at 10,000. Is the chance of it at some point going to 10,000 again any different when we were at 6,500, now at 4,200, or if it now goes to the Kang line at 3,300? It feels almost equally likely to come back to me. Like, I don't feel like it's like less likely to ever see 10,000 again than it was a couple weeks ago.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, just based on math, it's probably a little bit harder because you're doubling the distance. But, you know, that would assume that like crypto going from 4,000 to 6,000 takes a long time. I mean, we've seen days where it happens in like 4 hours. So under those circumstances, no, I think you're right.
I mean, I think of it a little bit like I knew a few people who bought into Ethereum for the first time at like $500 and it like pretty rapidly went to 250. I was like, whoa.
And it's now at like 120.
And then it went to, you know, over $1,000 and then it's now trading back at like $130. So
yeah.
I'm not necessarily gambling on maximalism, like taking over the world. I'm gambling on that there's one more hoorah in this party.
Okay. Well, for you and all our friends' sake, I hope that you're right. And I think that it would be exciting for many reasons. But, you know, I don't want people to get the wrong impression that I'm like rooting for Bitcoin to go to 3,300.
Well, I do feel like you need to, you know how you have to disclose that you have holdings in certain situations. I think as long as you're a no corner, you have to announce it at the top of every show.
Okay.
Because I don't want people listening to this thinking that, oh, there's no coiners around here. There's a no coiner here. His name's JK.
How about I announce it at the end of this show?
Okay.
I am a no coiner.
I'll just get the sound clip and I'll have the editor play it at the beginning of each show. It'll be like, the big price of Bitcoin is, and Jay is a no coiner.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I got one. Do you have time for one mailbag that came in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, this is an update on last week's episode, or a couple episodes ago, our Bat Brave extravaganza. So someone wrote in and made fun of us for not being able to understand Brave, which is apparently pretty easy. Shouts to Tahi Gichigi. But they helpfully screenshotted part of the Brave FAQ that answered a few of our questions. So it says, how are publishers and websites notified of my contributions? And it says, anytime they have over $100 in their account, an email is sent to the webmaster asking them to begin the process of becoming a verified Brave publisher. Okay. All seems pretty good there, right? We were talking about my project Longform being added to it. And, you know, I guess we haven't hit $100 because I haven't gotten that email. I actually do notice that on this person's web browser, which they have screenshotted here for this FAQ, they have Longform open. So shouts to them. But there's one more question here. Where does my contribution go if a publisher / website is not part of the program yet? When there is $100 in your account for your publisher, we make attempts to notify you. And if you have an unclaimed funds for a minimum of 90 days, it gets added to the user growth pool. So if you're wondering where those 25 BAT that you got for free came from, they were misappropriated by the user growth pool, which feels to me a little like the tax man there.
Yeah.
So,
well, I hope you one day do get that email, Aaron, that you have $100 in BAT.
I do too, but I think it says a little bit about the ecosystem, that the ecosystem's like, there's money here if you come within 90 days, but all the money just goes back to us otherwise. I'd like to see a graph of how much of the publisher payments goes to actual publishers versus the user growth pool.
I'm not sure if you're going to hit that $100 in 90 days, considering I sent you like 36 cents.
Cool. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, talk to you then.
Perhaps we will have crossed the Kang line then, and you'll have news.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you soon.
That's it.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, November 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $4,413.
Thanks for listening to Coin Talk. In between taping this episode and it coming out, I have lost my voice. It's not due to crying over the price of Bitcoin, which subsequently after us taping this dipped down into the 3,000s, but probably just an overdue sickness. So I'm getting this episode out a little early for you. We usually come out on Wednesdays. I'm not sure when we'll be able to tape the next one. It depends when my voice comes back. This episode was edited by James Nicholson. I'm Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. We are planning a mailbag show, which I'm sure to have the full-throated voice back in and perhaps a better Bitcoin price during. You can send in questions for that at hi@cointalk.show. We've been hearing from lots of great sponsors. We actually have a couple coming up. Maybe you'd like to be one of them. Again, hi@cointalk.show. See you next week.